Okay, today is Monday, the 17th of April, 2023, and I received a few nice comments on yesterday's shiur, the Divrei Chizuk. I have to be honest, I needed the Chizuk as much as everyone else, so that thought from Rav Hutner, from Yehoshua Hutner, I just told it to Rav David Miller. It's a thought that has inspired me since the Yom Kippur War. And I'm happy that, Yehoshua, you said the Hallel b'simcha. I want to make one correction in my slip of the tongue yesterday. I said tinokot, I should have said tinokot shenishbu. I said how the Lubavitcher Rebbe would refer to them in contradistinction to Rav Moshe Feinstein. And I think I said tinokot shenishbu. And it's tinokot shenishbu, because shenishbu with an ayin or an aleph does not fit in. It's tinokot shenishbu. Okay. I made the correction. Coming back to what we just said a minute ago, with all that's been said about Rav Soloveitchik, so a lot has been published. Some of it correct, some of it incorrect, but there's just one mistake that keeps on coming up. I've corrected it many times. I simply want to correct it again. In Makor Rishon, there's a very nice article on the Rav and interviewing Tova and Atara Zichrona Livracha. And the Rabbi Dr. Kenny Katriel Brander, Kenny Brander has a memoir. He was the Rav Shamus. But I corrected him. He doesn't accept it. That I have to tell you, facts are facts. The Rav never left Boston after Hanukkah 1985. Unfortunately, during 84, 85, there were periods where he was with it and periods where he was not totally with it. A mensch like a mensch. And the last year was Hanukkah. I have it verified. I actually have the exact date. Everything was researched thoroughly. Now, Kenny Brander writes that in 86, notice the date, the family told him not to tell the Rav that Rav Moshe Feinstein died. And then the Rav found out, and the Rav said to Kenny, "Why didn't you tell me?" And Kenny asked the Rav, told the Rav, the family told me, and how did you find out, Rabbi? And the Rav said, because Rav Moshe would call me before Pesach, and he didn't call me this year. All that happened 1 year earlier. It could not have happened in 86, because the Rav was never in New York in 1986. I don't want to go further. There were certain incidents happening. I can't even talk about it because it breaks me up. Well, if you know, I'm emotional, and to talk about your Rebbe, and it was a time not to let him appear in public. This happened in 85. Rav Moshe took very ill. It was not that Rav Moshe died. Rav Moshe took very ill. And I remember the story, Bishat Maisa, of course, I had a direct connection to everything going on with the Rav through the Holzer of family, his other Gabayim. And it was then that the family asked Rabbi Brander, or Kenny at the time, don't tell the Rav that Rav Moshe is so ill. Later, the Rav found out, and he rebuked his Gabbai, "Why didn't you tell me?" And he said, "The family asked me not to tell you. How did you find out?" And then the Rav told the story that before Yontif, he would call Rav Moshe, Rav Moshe would call him. It was Rav Moshe's turn to call that year before Pesach, and he never called. So the Rav asked, and he suspected Rav Moshe was not well already. You become older, you become older. And it happened a year earlier. I just, for the sake of historical accuracy, and when you speak about the Rav at YU, he was there, he taught for 44 years. 1941 through Hanukkah, 1985. Okay, I just want to make that correction because I've made it at least twice before, and others have also made the correction who remember the era. And somehow the 1986 story with Reb Moshe and the dying is Reb Moshe being ill. Okay, regarding Reb Meir Shapiro, so a Talmud, Chaim Lindenblatt, who was a Talmud of Reb David Lifshitz, so he says that Reb David Lifshitz, I remember, I mean, he doesn't have to tell me, Reb David used to sing, I don't know, do you remember this? I mean, even this, he would sing with the Talmidim and dance. He was a very different person than the Rav or Reb Mendel Zaks. It was Reb David is Reb David. There was a motion to him that came across. They all had emotion, but Reb David, the emotion was revealed. So we used to sing, but I remember like yesterday, Taheli Beinu Liavdecha B'Yemet. B'Yemes, I should say, if I'm reliving it. And he once told the Talmidim, where did I hear this the first time, this niggin? When Reb Meir Shapiro visited Mir. We spoke about last week, Reb Meir Shapiro visiting Mir, etc. That's where he heard the niggin the first time. Another interesting email from my Talmud, Rabbi Moshe Kravitz in Chicago, who is a Talmud of Reb Yitzchak Kutner, not Reb, I quoted Reb Yeshua yesterday, it's Reb Yitzchak Kutner's cousin. So he writes that I was correct, in Detroit, the day school began as Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. My father's from Detroit, and he studied in Chachmei Lublin. The story goes that Rabbi Rottenberg approached my great-grandfather, Bernard Isaacs, a major Zionist and communal leader in Detroit, to help him organize the Chachmei Lublin Yeshiva. And his grandfather's answer was, forget it, hair will grow on my palm before you have a yeshiva. It's not going to work. And this is what I write about in my work on the Rav, that the Rav said the generation in America that was still frum, but they had no confidence in the future. And Rabbi Rottenberg answered him, I'll have a yeshiva and your ernicle will learn with me in it. And Kachave, he began his education in Chachmei Lublin in Detroit. All right, now I want to come to today's Shia, and I'm glad we have a Chabad Shaluach sitting here because my story involves a Chabad Shaluach. I have a share. You see, until now we spoke about Chachmei Lublin, the Daf Yomi. If this would be a high school class or a college class, Yetzati et Chovati, that's it. There was a Daf Yomi introduced. But when you really do research, you uncover a whole world. Charlie, I have to be honest, you're a PhD from Harvard. How many people are interested in what you did your PhD? All right, President Katzir was interested. I have to be honest, I recognize the world is not really interested. All right, Rakefet, keep your mouth shut. It's enough to know he established the Daf Yomi. When you do a doctorate, you uncover a world. Now, I have a schut that I visited. I was a guest as a result of the Kollel. Everything good has happened to me as a result of my teaching here in Israel, Gris Kollel, etc. I had a student here who came from Australia, and first 2 years in Israel, he just studied. It turned out he's not a poor man, and he was Chaim Gutnick's partner in Australia. And after 2 years of study, he went back to do construction in Israel, etc. He raised a wonderful son here, a Rav and a PhD. So he sent me to Australia. In Australia, they checked me out because they were worried I was a dove. You see, Rabbi Soloveitchik's students, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, they had a reputation that they were more dovish. When they found out I'm a right-wing hawk and I grew up on the lap of Meir Kahana, I became a hero. But I became a hero. Remember my last shiur, I showed you how I became a hero with that shiur. So I come, I'm in Melbourne 2 weeks, then I go to Sydney for 2 weeks. And in Sydney I meet a young Chabad Shaluch by the name of David Slavin, S-A-L-V-I-N. And I remember we hit it off. We hit it off and he said. So I encouraged him to do a doctorate. He's still in Australia and he's still a Chabad Shaluch and he's still doing great things. But he did a doctorate. I spoke with him in the year 2000. This is his the completion of his doctorate, 2012. Doctorate done at the University of Sydney, the Department of Hebrew, Biblical and Jewish Studies, a thesis submitted in fulfillment of the requirement for the degree of Doctor of Philosophy. And it reads, Rabbi David Slavin, and in parentheses, David Slavin. And I have to tell you, it's a wonderful doctorate filled with research. And this week and next week, I'm going to share with you, come back to these topics and show you what you gain when you do a doctorate and do your research. Yes, Morty.
What's the title?
The title, it hasn't been published. It's was brought to me by another Talmud of mine who got it from David Stern, who lives in Muncie, came to Israel. It's successful innovation to preserve tradition. The educational contributions of Rabbi Meir Shapiro. Okay? And it should be published. It's again, will the world really be interested, Avi, if we're only going to do research on what the world in Rochester cares about? It'll be very, very limited. So you got to accept the doctorate and rejoice. And sometimes I'm a little frustrated. I said I published this, I published that, and I said to myself, who read it? But you got to do what you do, and people will find a way. Now, Morty, what? No, Morty, you're not good. You never studied at NYU. Avi, how does NYU fit into this doctorate? Mayor, good question. Chabadnik in Sydney, Australia. Why you? Charlie, very simple. Vic, do you know the name Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb? I should hope so. Third president of Yeshiva University. Graduate of Teira Vadas High School. And then Yeshiva College. Fine. Who was Normie Lamb's uncle? These are people I knew intimately. Rabbi Joe, who grew up here in Crown Heights, before it became the capital of Chabad. Crown Heights, Rabbi Joseph Baumel. Make believe you've heard the name, the Baumel family, so the ignorant pass for the wise. Son, we're talking about Yosef, son of the Emek Halacha, Rabbi Yoshua Baumel. Tell me, where did Rabbi Yosef Baumel learn? Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. So Rabbi Lamb's uncle, who I knew quite well, he was the principal of the Crown Heights Yeshiva. He built the Crown Heights Yeshiva. He was a great source of information for this doctorate. He cited time and time again. All right, I'm quoting from the doctorate. I'm quoting from the chapter dealing with the Daf Yomi, and it's a beautiful, beautiful chapter. Now, let me introduce it and say something that's influenced my entire life. And I actually write this up in Washington. And it's a very simple story, but very profound message. I'm a kid in high school. I'm already, I was in a college shiur, Rabbi Noach Bornstein shiur, and it's the early 50s, and everyone is talking about Chabad. You have to understand that the seventh Rebbe was a revolution. Before you had in America the Biyana, I still remember I write about going, crossing the Williamsburg Bridge Friday night from Williamsburg to the Lower East Side to hear Kiddush at the Bianer Rebbe. There was, you remember, you're a bishop from the Lower East Side. I mean, that Kiddush, if I never make Kiddush until today, it's because of course, if someone would have tapped me on the shoulder and said, Arnie, you're going to teach the Bianer Rebbe's grandchildren, and some of them you'll play a big role in helping them through difficult periods. I would say, what are you, crazy? V'chumach said the Bianer Rebbe, Vushin, Kedusha, Tara, but Kachave, that's what happened. So there was the sixth Rebbe came to America, but their influence was limited. The seventh Rebbe, everyone starts talking there. Williamsburg, the man has ideas, outreach all over. It was unbelievable. So a few of us got together, and we wanted to see what's going on in Chabad. And we got in touch with 770, and we told them we'd like to come for Shabbos. And they arranged hospitality, and they put me up with a Chabad family, and I don't remember the name of the family, although I can envision what they looked like. And it was an unbelievable Shabbos. It was Shabbos Mevarchim Rosh Chodesh, and the Rebbe spoke on Shabbos Mevarchim. At that point in his life, there was a whole Fabringen on Shabbos afternoon, early afternoon after Musaf. And we go and we run. That's why I told the story. I write this up too with mikveh. How Shabbos morning, everyone's going to mikveh and they're taking us along. And I say, how can I go to mikveh? You know, litvaka, taking a shower, Shabbos, washing the whole body. They said, no, we go to mikveh. Before I knew it, I was naked and pushed into the mikveh. So at the end of Shabbos, I asked my host, and I said, this is, you know, a third generation American kid, an MTA boy, okay? I have to admit at the time already, I'd been exposed since seventh grade to Litvisha, to Mir, to the Shanghai crowd. And I asked him, I said, look, you dress in black. Agudat Yisrael dresses in black. What's the difference between you? What's unique? Everyone's in black. All right, where were you guys? We dress with westernized styles. We don't have a uniform. But you're all black. And he gave me an answer that has shaped my life until today. And he said to me, I'll tell you what the difference is. If Mizrahi built 50 mikvahot, Agudah would invalidate them. If Agudah built 50 mikvahot, Mizrahi would invalidate them. The Lubavitcher Rebbe would send a telegram to both Mizrahi and Agudah, Yashar Koyach, was du haben gebaut 50 mikvahs, shebanitem 50 mikvahot. You follow me, Mori? Wow. Now, that changed my thinking. And of course, then I studied with the Rav, and his whole life represented that as well. The Rav, remember, occasionally Chassidus Shiyunga man life used to come into the Shia. The Rav, there was never a feeling, why don't you go to Harvard? Why don't you go to Yale? Guys from Lakewood, I still remember the rabbinical convention, which I addressed in 77, so the Rav is talking with one of the Rabbanim whose son was very big in Lakewood. He became an Avbeitin. We were in correspondence. He's not alive today, unfortunately. And the Rav was, mit Ayazun kem in Redmond learning. With your son I can talk in learning. The Rav should have said to him, your son didn't go to college. You follow me, Avi? There was never the concept, our Hashkafer is for everybody. 100%. Hashkafa. Tyron mitzvah with Tafken and Lerinin. Everything else is secondary. Now, why am I telling you this? It's very important because, believe it or not, when Reb Meir Shapiro came up with the idea to publicize, we'll see in a minute names, the concept of a Daf Yomi, there was plenty of opposition to him from the Frum community. Part of it was Agudat Yisrael, Munkach, later Satmar, but Munkach is very big now. Bells. What was their attitude? Agudat Yisrael, not because of Chadash Eslumin HaTorah, innovation. Whoever heard of an international convention of Orthodox Jews, Knesiya Gedola? Today, you hear this, you know, you wonder, could this be? Absolutely. And he had a lot of difficulty at first. The reason Reb Meir Shapira succeeded was, on one hand, the Gerer Rebbe stood behind him, although he was a Chutkav of Chassid. And again, when I mention Chutkav today, you don't realize how big it was at that time. Chutkav today is limited, I'm told. I know Antwerp, I know in Belgium there's a little, and in Manchester, where I'm married into the Manchester community, man. My grandson's married to the granddaughter of, I met people from Manchester yesterday, and oh, her grandfather, Rav Unstaffer, was the posek of the Haredi posek of Manchester. Her uncle is the Haredi posek of Montreal. But Baruch Hashem, from that same family, there are hundreds of descendants, religious Zionists, living Alat Mata Kodesh. And the Chutkav Rebbe, terrific amount of Chassidim, but the Gerer Rebbe was the biggest. He supported Reb Meir Shapira, the Chafetz Chaim. And we'll see. And by the way, the story with the Chafetz Chaim, this we know through Rabbi Baumel, through Rabbi Chrisworth, later of Antwerp, Chicago. Antwerp, if you recognize the name, Rabbi Chrisworth, he too studied in Chachmei Lublin. Okay, so now let's begin. You see, Reb Meir Shapira, being a shtetl in Piatkov, and afterwards, of course, in Lublin, his influence was limited. But then he becomes a member of the parliament, the Sem, and Agudat Yisrael. And here, Agudat Yisrael, the whole formation of Agudat Yisrael, gave him a background to develop the idea of Daf Yomi and make it something for all Jews. Now, let me say a few words about how Agudat Yisrael began. I lectured on this extensively a generation ago, 20 years ago, perhaps more. But I just want to be very brief. There would have never been Agudat Yisrael if not for the Enlightenment. We Jews don't know how to get along. We're very happy to be different. I'm Kshei Oref. We're very happy to fight with each other. Unfortunately, this has been our history since Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm Kshei Oref. When the Enlightenment began, and we're going back to the 1760s, you take Moshe Mendelssohn as a perfect example. Moshe Mendelssohn, named for the Rama, Rav Moshe Isserles, his great-grandfather, he was a Frum Jew. You can read, there's Alexander Altman. Are you familiar? He did the classic work on Moshe Mendelssohn. Alexander Altman was a Rav in England, Germany, to England, to Boston. The Rav knew him very well. He was a Talmud Chacham, a Yerei Shemayim, but broad knowledge. He did the classic work on Mendelssohn. I don't know if he wrote it in German, and I have it in English translation. Could be. Charlie, you can check it out. It's a Jewish Publication Society work. Could be it's a translation from German, or it could be he already wrote it in English. It's a major work. And there you see he produces Mendelssohn's letters and diary, and Mendelssohn is talking with great German scholars, philosophers, writers, and he says, I have to cut off now as I have to get ready for Shabbos. Some great German non-Jewish personality wants to visit Mendelssohn. Mendelssohn says, you can come visit me on Shabbos, but I can't visit you because I can't drive. I can't go with a horse and carriage. So, I mean, that Mendelssohn's wife, if you look at pictures of Frumet, her hair is covered. Our wives don't cover their hair the way Mendelssohn's wife covered her hair. Plain and simple. I'm not talking Lithuania. I'm talking women who do cover their hair, but not Mendelssohn's wife. It was from. But he was part of the Western world. I once defined, if you recall, in this classroom, they wanted to interview me for Ami magazine. I was forced into it because I don't like to be interviewed by magazines that don't publish pictures of women. I have my own understanding of the way God made the world and Sefer Bereshit and all that goes with it. But my arm was twisted by my dear student, Rabbi Moshe Kripke. Rebbe, you have to do it. Lecover the Rav's memory. What can I do when I hear already lecover the Rav's memory? So I made it tonight. If anyone wants to interview me, they have to hear me give the shiur first. Remember, Brisker came to the shiur. And afterwards, he asked me, how would you define the Rav? I said I would define the Rav as a Litvisher Gadol in the Western world. And he started dancing around me. You hit the nail on the head. I don't know how he had to wait for me to say it. It's obvious that was the Rav. Mendelssohn was exactly the same. He valued the Western world, knowledge, the beautiful ideas. And there is much that's good. But by the time you reach his grandchildren, only one died Jewish. You reach his great-grandchildren, not one died Jewish. This is what I'm told. I haven't done my own research. It's not an area that I can say I'm the expert. But this is what I've read. This is what I'm told. It's very sad. This ongoing challenge picked up a lot of steam in the dawn of the 20th century. The Rav always spoke about, and he was growing up in shtetl, the only Mechalel Shabbos was the pharmacist and the doctor. And they had a shtikla heta to do their work on Shabbos. Outside of that, everyone was shomer Shabbos. By the time World War I is over, there's a total breakdown all over Europe, in the Litvische Welt, in the Hasidic world, wherever you go, and Zionism became very big. You've heard my lectures. World War I put Zionism on the map. Jews reached the conclusion, we have to have our own state. Wherever there was war, the Jews suffered. Soldiers, East, West, German, Russian, wherever the Jew was involved, the Jew ultimately suffered. And Zionism caught on very big, powerful. Now, unfortunately, and I say this with prejudice because I'm a religious Zionist, b'lev v'nefesh, had the Belzer Rebbe, had the Munkacher, had the Gerer Rebbe stated publicly, you have to go in Aliyah, join the Chovevei Tzion, it would have been an entire different situation here. I mean, just imagine my wife's family, Belz Chassidim, imagine if her forebears and that ilk had come in Aliyah, it would have today 20 million Jews in Israel, at least three quarters Shomrei Torah u'mitzvot. But it didn't happen. They didn't come. And the second Aliyah, 1904 to 1914, they built the state. They set the tone. Everything we have here today, from Histadrut to Kupat Cholim, to the chinuch system, to the total public thoroughfare, which excludes halacha, halachic identity. Yes, there is a nebulous Jewish identity. We are a Jewish state. Are we really a Jewish state? How many battles we had to fight not to have buses on Shabbos? What went on in Yerushalayim, Kikar Shabbat, to get that area shut down to traffic? Jews were killed on Shabbos. Demonstrations, blood, it's kashrut, chametz in the hospitals, the Supreme Court. All that was established by 1904 to 1914. And the battle going on now is a very serious battle, because for the first time, the majority is clearly in favor of a Jewish state, a Jewish democratic state, not a democratic state of Jewish origins. And this is the battle you have right now. And it's a very serious issue, because these people who built the country and built the army and built the Air Force and built the economy, they feel they're the elite. And as the story comes out, many stories, but one that's being told and retold now, that some pilot comes into the kitchen and he demands hot dogs and chips. And the chef tells him, it's an army kitchen, says to him, it's against regulations. This is milchiks. We're serving milchiks now. Says, I don't give a hoot what you're serving. I'm not part of the army. I'm from the Air Force. We're elite and we get what we want. And this attitude is exactly at the root of the issue today. On the other hand, you have to be honest. They are the Air Force. They built the country. They built the economy. Everything we have, to a certain degree, we owe that Aliyah of 1904-1914, Golda Meir, David Ben-Gurion, all the names you will mention, Yitzhak Ben-Tzvi. Now, Yitzhak Ben-Tzvi was a Shomer Shabbos, you should know. He already was... more. The Jewish feeling we have goes back to someone like Yitzhak Ben Tzvi. David Ben Gurion and Paula was worse than David, and this I can tell you from stories I heard from eyewitnesses 50 years ago, 53 years ago. I heard these stories when I came in Aliyah. She was worse than David, but he came from a Shomer Shabbos home, and he understood that if we're going to have Jews from the Sephardic countries and the Holocaust survivors, there has to be some basic halakha that must be kept so we remain one people. That's how Kedushin and Gerushin was put in the hands of the rabbinate. Today you have civil marriage all over Israel. It's no big deal. You go to the lawyer, they draw up a whole document, all right? It's not a formal civil marriage, but halakha l'maisa, it is a civil marriage. And the Supreme Court, which is far from being bound to Dvar Hashem Zu Halacha, now you can go on Zoom, and there's some countries in the world, or states in America, where you can marry on Zoom. They give you a license, you're married, and the Misrata Pnim, this was just the ruling of the Supreme Court, not a few months ago. So, but by the 20th century, there were people that saw this happening, and people who cared. And there was a Jew from Germany, I had the privilege and honor of teaching his descendants, Yitzchak Isaac Halevi. And he studied, this was a German Jew who wandered to Lithuania and studied in Volozhin and visited the Hasidic community. He was Dorot HaRishonim, he was a historian, published very interesting sforim that tried to create a synthesis between academic scholarship and Chazal in creating, retelling Jewish history. And he tried to knock a few heads together. And this is before World War I. And this is what I told you many times, and you should know this. I hope they teach it in Israel. They called the conference to unite all Torah Jews in the world. in Katowice, Poland, on the border of Czechoslovakia. In unity there is strength. A house divided cannot stand. And they came from all over. The Gerer Rebbe, Reb Chaim, the German Rabbanim, Yaakov Rosenheim. The truth has to be told. And again, I've said this, I actually am going to publish this with sources. It's well known, it's been published, and what I'm doing in English has been published in Hebrew, but I'm publishing it within, I have a major work which is ready, but I'm not ready to publish it. I have more than I want to write. I have a major work, 161 pages on rabbinic authority, the piece that just appeared in Maser Rav, in memory of the Rav, which the World Mizrahi will republish, is a fallout from that piece. It's a 30-page piece on Herzl and Zionism, Joseph and his brothers. We've spoken about it. We gave a good deal of it in class when we finished off the Satmar. So Reb Chaim comes to the 1912 meeting. This is a preliminary to a preliminary to Agudat Yisrael. 1912. And he walks out. And anyone who tells you Reb Chaim Brisk, who is one of the founders of Agudat Yisrael, is a vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, ruthless, depraved, debauched, surreptitious liar with a capital L. He walks out. They asked him, but you have to understand what happened. They said, Reb Chaim, well, what happened? What's he? And Reb Chaim's answer, remember the answer? That Reb Chaim tells the story that the Brisker Rav came to a new community, his father, the Beit HaLevi, came to a new community, and his wife went into the Makolet, and she asked, Vifel, you know, how much does this cost? And then this 17-year-old kid who could barely speak says, Tzvei Rubel. She asked him, how much this costs? Tzvei Rubel. Tzvei Rubel. She goes over to the owner of the store. She says, what's going on here? Can't be. Every fruit and vegetable is 2 rubles. He said, lady, this kid was born challenged. We do him a favor in the city, Mahabin Rachmanis, Demilit Chesed, we hire him. He can only say Tzvei Rubel. You take what you want and I'll give you the real price. So Reb Chaim said, Ich bin azay, the junge kind. I'm like this young man. I can only speak one language, Torah. And he says, when I heard a German Rav speak for a half hour, und er nicht angezeichnet, nicht gemacht, he didn't mention one Chazal, this is not for me. And Reb Chaim walked out. So, Charlie, I'm not trying to put down the Yekkers. We'll come to them. They are different. You'll see the understanding. But this shows you the difficulty. How can you bring Jews together? German Jews, Litvische Jews, Hasidic Jews. It's a tremendous challenge. So Reb Yitzchak Halevi kept on pushing and pushing. And they planned the establishment, the conference that would give birth to Agudat Yisrael, 1914. Avi, this will explain to you when Rakefa tells you he knows this gentleman who's the grandson of the Rav of Basel who hosted Rav Kook in 1914. I know. Absolutely know the grandson. He lives one block from my house, a Yiddish tzaddik, Moshe, his wife Ruth Cohn, something special, as an anacle of Rav Cohn of Basel. Avi, you have to ask, how did Rav Kook get to Basel? How does he leave Eretz Yisrael? Rav of Yaffa, he's here already 12, 13 years, and what's he doing in Europe? Exactly. For the convention to establish Agudat Yisrael, they invited Jews, Rabbanim, from all over the world. It was to be an umbrella organization that would include everyone. In those days, it's not like today, you travel by plane. Rav Kook had to take a boat to Europe, got on a train, and while he's on the train, World War I breaks out. And that's how Rav Kook got stuck in Europe. And he winds up in Switzerland, where Rav Cohn was one of the big supporters of Theodor Herzl. He stays there 2 years. And then a rabbinate opens in England, Maxike Hadat in London, a Litvische Kehila, Lithuanian emigres to England, and they bring him to England. And he's there another 2 years until they bring him back to Israel, 1919 actually, to become chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. So, you see, the idea was germinating. Finally, after World War I, 1919, this conference finally takes place. You have your first Knesia Gdola in 1923 in Vienna. That's where the Daf Yomi is introduced. Now, by this time, Zionism after World War I has become an octopus. Before World War I, it was a small organization. It swallowed up a few children. After World War I, every kid was running away from the shtibbel, running away from the Talmud Torah, from the cheder. A new dawn, Zionism, new people, new ideas, new tomorrow. It was had more impact on the Jews than socialism, Bolshevism, communism, Bundism. What a challenge. And in 1919, they made two decisions that supposedly should be part of Agudat Yisrael until today. One certainly may be to a certain extent. The other one has fallen away. The Eder Haredit and Satmar have never allowed Agudat to forget that they are traitors to their own ideology. What are the two ideals? Well, one is, of course, Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah. All decisions have to be made by the Gedolei HaTorah. Balabatim play no role on that level. What's the reality? I would like to believe today we have splits on top of splits. There's a Moetzet for the Litvakim. There's a separate Moetzet for the Chassidim. There's a separate Moetzet Chachmei Shas for the Sfadim. But I would like to believe that the Gedolei Torah play a big role. The cynics tell you it's not the Gedolei Torah. I've been told this by many times. And I happen to know some of the key Balabatim in Agudat Yisrael. And there's nothing too admirable there. What I know I can't even say in public. All I can tell you is they've taken students that I put my heart into and destroyed their souls. Don't want to go further. And I'm telling exactly the truth. Unfortunately, this one is not alive. My students are not alive. I've seen a lot in my life. I just told someone in shul this morning, there was no Kohen, so the Gabbai gives me too much cover. That's amazing. He's an Israeli, but his cousin is a Talmud Mufak of mine from 50 plus years ago. And his cousin always, you know, they're in constant talk, a constant correspondence. So I became a Kohen this morning. But I told him, I said, this morning was something we were talking about before davening. It's about 5:10 in the morning. Can't daven yet. So I said to him, I'm a dummy. I write svarim and this, who's interested? I said, if I would write novels about what I've seen in my life and my students and people and interaction and pornography from so-called great Jews, I would have bestsellers. We both had a good laugh. So the cynics say it's the Balabatam. I would imagine it's two-thirds the Gedolei Yisrael and one-third the Balabatam. Vasmishin Zicharayin, and they're controlled Gedolim. I know if people come to me and bother me, I assign this student that. I don't have time. I understand. All right, I depend upon Yomo. If Yomo says something, I sign on the dotted line. Okay? You follow me? This is what went on. So that's one decision. But let's give them credit. Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah. Good or bad, there's a lot that we can talk about, but that's their decision. The second decision, Zionism is absolutely treif. Anyone who's a Zionist is not a good Jew. If you're a Zionist, I don't want to quote Rakefet, but a rotten, vicious, malicious, etc., you're out. You can't be a member. We don't want you here. Now, that part of Agudat Yisrael, this is where, if you read Satmar, if you read Eidech HaReidit, the Torah Kata, they don't let the Agudah forget, because as you all know, Agudah sits in the Knesset, Agudah votes in the election, Agudah today is a member of the government, Agudah today takes cabinet positions. What? You're as Zionistic as everyone else. What happened to your principle? All right. If you read and study what I just published, you'll get your answer. But this is what took place. Now, with this, Mayor, a pleasure. Give my regards to Wayne, New Jersey. How far is it from Maplewood, South Orange?
25 minutes.
Wow, wow, wow.
And
what did you say?
15 minutes from Passaic,
right? You should do great work there and be Makarev Jews, Lakabadal Tiferet. Where would the Jewish people be without that immigrant who came to America in 1941? What one man accomplished. You have no idea what was before and what is today. Overwhelming. Kala Kavod. Okay, don't forget, I have a son-in-law who was a big shot in the army and now in other parts of security, and when he has to go to South Korea and he's worried about Shabbos and Kashrut, he contacts the ambassador, our ambassador, the ambassador contacts the Chabad Shaluch, and he writes to my son-in-law, I have bad news and good news. The bad news, the only rabbi here from America is a reform rabbi with the troops. The good news, Chabad has opened and they're going to start a minyan the week you arrive. That week he was the 10th one for the minyan. Today already, he's been back. Today already it's blossoming. The covered of the Tiferet, big, big. You know, I was very close with Label Groner. We were very close. You have no idea. Our souls interacted. All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for honoring me with your presence. Okay, back here. Now, with all this being said, that's the third generation on top of the generation on top that we were speaking about, right? Am I right or wrong?
Yeah.
Okay, Baruch Hashem. With all this being said, Rav Meir Shapiro, being a Polish chassid, was part and parcel of Agudat Yisrael. But he recognized something. Agudat Yisrael gave him strength. Had he proposed on his own, let's say in the state of Israel, you have a fine rabbi in Modi'in. I'm giving an example. Modi'in. And he proposes something. It's limited. If the chief rabbinate proposes, it can have more influence. Rav Meir Shapiro understood if he's going to come up with an idea of a daf yomi, it's going to have limited influence. if Agudat Yisrael puts its strength behind it, stands behind them, the influence will be that much greater. And he recognized that Agudat Yisrael has to become the vehicle for Daf Yomi. And until today, to a certain degree, Daf Yomi is identified with Agudat Yisrael. And this goes back to Reb Meir Shapiro and his own thinking. Now, this idea of a Daf Yomi, do we have any precedence for it? So you should be aware that when Rabbi Yosef Karo published the Shulchan Aruch, it was originally divided into 30 divisions that you should finish studying the Shulchan Aruch each month. You follow them? It never caught on, but the idea was there. But later, with the Ari HaKodesh and the whole push towards Kabbalah, Zohar, we have the Chok Yisrael, the whole development of the Chok Yisrael. Now, the Chok Yisrael, you see, today, people, it's something from the past. The Daf Yomi has conquered the world to a certain degree. You'll see. I'll give you all the sources and explanations. But when I was growing up, in every shul you found the Chok Yisrael. What was Chok Yisrael? Do you know? It's divided up. Chumash, Pashat HaShavua, each day, Echad Mikra, Shtayim Targum, Mishnah, Gemara, Zohar. You have various editions, some with more, some with less. You have Yiddish, you have Chok Yisrael, like a Tzene Re'ena, mit a Teitsch, mit Zaktas in Yiddish, mit Teitsch das Ab. So you see, the concept was there. The idea, even take the Chumash, when you talk about the Chumash, how do we lay in, how do we divide it up? Originally, all this was Yesh Mayayin. Who says you have to finish the Chumash in a year? Wasn't there a tri-cycle? Years ago, you had some finished it in a year, some finished it in 3 years. Eretz Yisrael, Bavel, tri-cycle. Who says 1 year? But you see, the whole concept of division, of dividing up, of finishing in a year, of achieving, it worked out. It caught on. Today, everyone lays, we finish the Chumash, we make a... how can you have a Simchas Torah if you're going to only finish the Chumash once in 3 years? So you see, the life, the Torah life, it has a vision of its own. It's a living organism. It works. It all comes back to my Sunday Shayurim, the Gemara in Psachim, Samech Vav, Smolcha B'nei Yisrael, Im Lo Neviim Heim, B'nei Neviim Heim. The Gemara in Bracha, Tachman Dalar Amet Bet, Nechei Amar Aleph, Fuch Hazi, Mai Ama Devar. So you see, there's a healthy part of being part of the Torah people. We work it out. We work it out. I just got an email. We were talking about, I mentioned Tchum. You know, people are listening all over the world. So I mentioned something, it was just a side, but someone picked it up and he wrote to me that someone in Lakewood, a serious Talmud Chacham, wrote a sefer on Tchumim, dealing with distances and how far you can walk on Shabbos where there's an area which is not cultivated, etc., no buildings. And people are upset with this sefer. Why? We always walk, for instance, I wrote back, he wrote to me that They walked across the bridge on Shabbos. What was it? The Brooklyn Bridge, he says. Did he say Brooklyn Bridge? Yomo, the email. To see Reb Moshe Feinstein on Shabbos. And I wrote back to him that I remember walking across the Williamsburg Bridge to hear Kiddush at the Biyana. And no one questioned these Tumim. I threw out the George Washington Bridge. Could anyone tell me if that's more than the Tum Shabbos? I'm just curious, because I never recall walking the George Washington Bridge. The Washington Bridge, the little bridge that connected the West Bronx with Washington Heights, Shabbos was filled with Jews. That was never a shaila. But you see, there's something, this is what we did. This is what the Jewish people did. This is the way we live. The same thing with Erevin. Remember my Sherman Erevin? The Rush got hysterical at a Talmud who questioned it's halachic fiction. You're building a wall. What type of wall? A wire? The Chatam Sofer, the same thing. A Talmud question. Chatam Sofer says, you're not Bikaris. This is the way Jews have lived from time immemorial. And this is, it comes up now with the Shayurim. Whoever heard that you have to put a piece of plastic on your table showing you how much matzah you have to eat, how many leaves of lettuce you have to eat to say the night. You eat the way your father ate, the way your grandfather ate. This is Reb Chaim's famous work, Ruption Reconstruction. My classmate, Chaim Soloveitchik. All right, anyway, Reb Meir Shapiro, there were precedents. This was part of Jewish life. Now, here on page 141 in his thesis, Reb David, here he's absolutely correct. A lot has been written about this on a popular level, that the first person to publicize the concept of learning a Daf Yomi was Rav Moshe Menachem Mendel Spivak. And he published an article already in the local Jewish press in the early 1920s that we should institute a Daf Yomi. No one paid attention to it. There was a whole article in Jewish Observer. You can get all the footnotes here about Rabbi Spivak. But no one paid attention to him. Now, Reb Meir Shapiro takes the proposal, and at the Aguda convention, he's going to put it on the floor and make it public. They start asking around, and many of the Rabbanim are laughing. Some are laughing. The average Jew, Vikumta Salarin and Daf Yomi, how will he manage learning Daf Yomi? What did they learn in shuls? You won't believe this. It's totally forgotten today. No, when we were growing up, what do you say? Do you remember Ein Yaakov? Every shul, Savishin Mincha Mariv, today you mention Ein Yaakov, Rabbi Kalimnik doesn't know what I'm talking about. Do you know what I'm talking about? Of course not. You know or you don't know? How do you know Ein Yaakov? No, we were growing up. Every shul had a Mishnayah, the kids of Shulchan Aruch, 10 copies of Ein Yaakov. What was Ein Yaakov? From Balabatim, they took all the Agada out of the Gemara and put it together with Rashi and a Perush from the Ein Yaakov. Oh my gosh. Totally forgotten today. 1923, people were, Rabbanim was saying, well, you succeed, Narishkeit, Ein Yaakov, Genug Ein Yaakov, a Jew, he's going to learn Yevamot. Come on. He's going to learn Nida. He's going to learn a Reuven. Have you read Aaron Adler's books by Yehibim Soharon, 70 Conversations with the Rav? It's an excellent volume. It's he mamish captures the Rav Anu. All right, you follow me, Morty? I may be prejudiced because it's the Rav Anu. And on Aaron Adler, by the 70s, the Rav let his hair down. Aaron Adler was a close student, could talk with the Rav. So he tells the Rav a story that his son, learning in an elementary yeshiva, maybe it was a right-wing elementary yeshiva, so the Rebbe, the kid is 7th grade, 8th grade, the Rebbe decides to teach them Yevamot. Maybe it's high school, maybe it's a high school yeshiva. Yevamot? No. And the kids, I know I learned Yevamot. I've learned Yevamot 3 times already. I still don't know. I have to have pictures and charts in front of me. 5 brothers to 5 sisters. You need a whole computer program to understand Yevamot. So the kids complain, and Aaron Adler tells the Rav, Rebbe, what do you think? And the Rav says, absolutely, your son is right. The Rebbe is wrong. How do you take kids, young kids, Yevamot? So, you see, there was built in opposition. Who is this Maram Shapiro? A kunstmacher, a magician. He's going to open up every day, learn our. So watch, this we know from the Talmidim of Yachal, who the Maram Shapiro shared the stories, including, I don't know if you hear when I spoke about Rabbi Lam, Rabbi Lam's uncle, Rabbi Yosef Baumel, plays a big role in this doctorate, because he was in Yachal, he knew the story. What happens is very fascinating. Rabbi Meir Shapiro goes to the Chafetz Chaim, and tells the Chafetz Chaim of his plan. And the Chafetz Chaim says to him, if you propose it cold, they're going to laugh at you. You're a younger guy here, he's a young man. All right, he's stuck rough, piyatkov, but... So the Chafetz Chaim says, I'm living it in Yiddish, I'm trying to say it in English. Morty, from the time the Rav visited me when I was very sick, it's amazing, all my Yiddish came back to me, because I helped with them get up in Yiddish. I spoke with the Rav in Yiddish. It's unbelievable. So, the Chafetz Chaim said, I have an idea. Listen to this. You come to the meeting 20 minutes late. When you walk in, I will stand up for you. And then you make the proposal when you speak. Kachave. He came 20 minutes late. The Chafetz Chaim stood up for him. He made the proposal. Eidut Nemana from Talmidim, who heard it from others who were there at the Knesiyah Gedolah, when he finished the proposal of Chaim Griswold, says Eidot, they started dancing around Reb Meir Shapiro and carried him on their shoulders. They were so overwhelmed that the Chafetz Chaim stood up for him. Vic, let me put in parentheses now, standing up, the Chafetz Chaim. Let me tell you a story out of Yerushalayim. Nowadays, you have here the Yeshiva Yashan, the Eidu Charedit. We suffer from them. You have to understand. With their Hechsherim, every product here is marked not for Lola Ochlei Kitnius. If you're not a Svadi, you can't use the product. I have looked at some of the cooks' cakes and I can't find any legumes in them. Why are they depriving us poor Ashkenazim the privilege of eating the Sfadim? Have you been to the Shuk Erev Pesach? What they can buy, what they can eat. I'm ready to become a Sfadi. What can I do? I'm happy. I have all my granddaughters-in-law Sfadi Yot Tachorat, but they married Ashkenazim. They also fell into the trap. But that's the Charedit. My best story is I lived this story. The first year they came out with potato chips here. Chips. Oh, what went on? Eidu Charedit refused to give Hechsher. Whatever, check it out. Maybe it's 74, 75. Unser Tata hat nicht gegessen, our parents didn't eat this. We should give a hechsher on potato chips. All the kids from Neder Charedit went around the corner and they bought potato chips with the Rabbanut hechsher. The next year there wasn't a potato chip in Israel until today that doesn't have the Neder Charedit hechsher. So you see, there's gangsterism here. All right, now I'll tell you a true story that happened. Rav Gustman comes in Aliyah. Did you know Rav Gustman, Netzach Yisrael? Rav Gustman was a unique individual. Nobody could scare him or frighten him. He had his own opinions, and he kept to them. What he went through under the Nazis, you know the stories. His son was killed before his eyes. He survived with the partisans, with miracles, eating mushrooms. So he opens up Netzach Yisrael, and he has a caterer deliver food. The caterer was a few houses away, was later, BMT began with two buildings, one on Abarbanel and one in Eben Ezra, which was the part of the dormitory as well. That's where there was a caterer. It became a hotel afterwards. I don't know what it is today. Always a frum hotel. And that caterer, but that caterer only had hashgacha from Agudat Yisrael, not the Badatz. So gangsters came from the Badatz to Rav Gustman and said, either you take the Badatz, we'll make you and give you honor and publicize you, but if you don't take the Badatz, du lichst in dread, I can't translate that, we're going to put out past violence against you, that you feed yeshiva boys, none dachare did. And Rav Gustman lifted them up, put his hand and said, you pushtak, you think you're going to make me feel bad? I can't feel any worse than I felt when I saw my son killed before my eyes. There's nothing you can do that can frighten me. You think you're going to give me cover? Let me tell you, you ice pops, I was 23 years old when I succeeded my father on the basement, my father-in-law, Rav Meir Basson, on the basement in Vilna. Then in Chabarangok, when I walked in, Rav Chaim Moses stood up for me. You're going to give me covered? Rav Chaim Moses, that's the same thing. The Chafetz Chaim, and by the way, they backed off. He beat the heck out of him. He was strong. He was tall. I knew him, Rav Gustman. And they backed off. That was it. They saw with him, you can't frighten him and you can't reward him. He's the same individual, you know, that went to see the parade on Yom HaTzmut. And they said to him, the idiot said to him, Rebbe is Beetle Tatum and Kukdon, Chiloniim, Soldaten. And he said to them, I saw Jewish children killed before my eyes. I'm happy to see Jews marching proudly with the uniform of Tzva Hagana Yisrael. It's the same thing here with the Chafetz Chaim. It was genius. The Chafetz Chaim stood up for him. And with that, the Daf Yom was on the map. Now, the truth has to be told that the Rosh Hashanah, after the Knisya Gedolah, the Gerer Rebbe said, I have to finish the Tish early. I have to begin Daf Yomi. When the Gerer Rebbe said that, Daf Yomi took off. And they say, and this, I not only am reading it in the doctorate, I know it from my own Shanghai crowd. Give me a second. I can tell you many stories about Rav Gustman, but it's not for now. But he was a unique individual. Unique. One of a kind. One of a kind. Did you know him?
I heard about him.
heard about him. David Applebaum studied with him. So I once said to David, what do you get out of Rav Gustman? You studied, you were Talmud Mufakar Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. And David says to me, Aaron, he says, you don't understand. In Rav Gustman's Shia, it's not only Rav Gustman. Rav Chaim Meiser is sitting up front. Rav Shimon Shkup is sitting up front. I said, all right, I said to David, I understand you. You don't have to elaborate further. My funniest story with Rav Gustman is it happened to me December 23rd, 1983. I fell. There were steps built into the mountain here. It doesn't exist anymore. And coming back to my car after teaching a michlala, I broke my hand, my fingers, don't ask. I wind up in Shaarei Tzedek, they're setting the cast, they're doing what they can. And that night, I have a wedding. A wedding where Malka and I forced the husband and wife, the couple, to get married. They were involved in Kabbalah and theology, and we said, husband, your boy and a girl have to get married. Forget about everything else. You have to give us children. And they listened to us, believe it or not. And their poor parents, among our best friends, knowing that they're not alive anymore. And they come, the wife comes, father is world famous oncologist. He can't get away, so when she comes to arrange the wedding, and they want to get married, Hanukkah, December, Christmas, people can come, people are free. And this poor lady goes to all the hotels, finally in La Rome, what do they call it, the Imbal. They have one date, Christmas time, that the wedding can be. And they take it. The Chatan, who's now learning with Rav Gustman, tells his Rebbe, and he writes the Rebbe of the Masad Kedushin, and the Rebbe says, but I can't eat there. The mother-in-law calls me, the mother of the bride. She says, Aaron, I'm becoming a Catholic. I can't take it. I get the Inbal Hotel, and Rav Gustman won't eat there. What am I going to do? I said to her, Seal, within 24 hours, I will have your problem solved. Avi, do you think I'm an idiot? I have Ruach HaKodesh. I knew what I was doing. I said, give me 24 hours. The next morning, I grabbed David at davening, David Applebaum. I said, David, your Rebbe is killing us. Look, the story is this. He says, David says, Aaron, leave it to me. That morning, after Shia, he goes over to Rav Gustman and says, Rebbe, do the Haggits mention? You're killing me. What do you mean? He says, I don't want to mention the name of the family, and this is a Rav you know. He's a Rav not far from here today. And the, you won't eat. They can't get any help. Nee, ich mein nicht das, ich will nicht das. I don't mean I want, ich ess nicht Fleisch dorten. Ich will essen Fisch. I'll eat fish, not meat. Well, these people are tzaddikim. I come to the wedding. I went through hell that day. I was operated on. I'm in a cast. I can barely walk. My wife is carrying me. I was young. Give me a shtickel flesh, not to embarrass Rav Gustman. The whole meal was fish. And worse than that, they sat me Ebenun next to Rav Gustman. He was there with his Talmud Mufak, who I know as well. And the whole meal, I couldn't eat a thing, because the Talmud told Rav Gustman, their younger man is a Talmud Mufak for Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik from the Boston Rav. The whole meal, he was asking me, what did the Rav say about this, and what did the Rav say about what was the Rav Minikir? Gentlemen, Rav Chaim Meiser stood up for Rav Gustman, and the Chafetz Chaim stood up for Reb Meir Shapiro. Now, in his speech, and afterwards in articles, Reb Meir Shapiro added a world to what would be accomplished by the Daf Yomi. First of all, unity. What am I talking about? Today, we travel, we go, we do. No one is limited to his little area. At the time of the Chafetz Chaim, 100 years ago, the first Knesiya Gedolah, there were railroads already. Within 20 years, they're going to be planes. You're moving. Jews are moving to new countries. Nothing is better for Jewish unity if a Jew leaves Vilna and they're learning Baba Batra, and 2 weeks later he arrives in America, gets off the boat, goes into the nearest Beis Medrash Shtibel in Brooklyn, Lower East Side, and they're learning the same Daf Gemara, Baba Batra. Few pages further on the ship, take a Gemara with you, and unity. Jews all over the world, the same stuff. And here everyone quotes the Zohar Vayakel, Yisrael V'Oraita V'Kudsha Berichu Chad Hu. This is what Reb Meir Shapiro made famous. Yisrael, the whole little niggin, when you're all learning the same Gemara, Chathu, it adds to the unity of the Jewish people, their relationship with God, and their inspiration from the Gemara. And this caught on. The masses could accept it. Now, unfortunately, what I said an hour ago, there was plenty of opposition. Some of the opposition was what I alluded to. Daf Yomi was identified with Agudat Yisrael. He had no choice. Had he suggested it on his own, like Rabbi Spivak, who would listen? Who would know? Who would care? A small group of people who were friendly with the chief rabbi of Piotrków, because it represented Agudat Yisrael, you had absolute opposition from Munkach, Bells, what you would call today Satmar, and they gave a reason for it. And whenever you have a reason, you can always come back to Chadash Asur Min HaTorah. This was the Chatam Sofer. The Chatam Sofer hid away. And you can understand why. He was fighting the Enlightenment, fighting the Reformed innovations, fighting the organ in a shul. Remember that Aaron Harin was a big Talmud Chacham. He's the one who wrote an entire sefer justifying an organ in a shul. And you can find justification. A shul is a mikdash ma'at. What did you have in the regular mikdash? Don't you have in Tehillim how all the Levim are praising God with... Excuse me?
Maran Erechim. Had a water organ.
Gemara in Erechim, they had a water organ. We see from Tehillim what the Levim were praising God with, and why not in a shul? You can, but the Chatam Sofer understood. You bring an organ to a shul, Chadash Asur Min HaTorah. What will it lead to? Daf Yomi? Who heard of such a thing? More than that, and this, there was an article in Tradition that these very ideas were conveyed. Daf Yomi, chutzpah. Who's on a level to learn Daf Yomi? How you bringing Daf Yomi? You're desecrating the Gemara. And it's true. I have some people learning Daf Yomi Like I say, Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha. Believe me, I wish I said it with more kavana, but Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha. But if I'm finding mincha, people are learning daf yomi, and they're learning daf yomi on a level, what are you showing me here? It's not about the daf, it's about the yomi. So this is exactly what they're objecting to. Wow, if people saw that on a Shattenstein Gemara, exactly what they're objecting to.
It's not a regular Shattenstein Gemara, it's a daf yomi edition.
Show me, it's not about the okay, yomi. That people, you know, I hear people took issue daf yomi chadash esumin haTorah, and the population. How do you, the chutzpah? How did they come? How did they come daf yomi to learn every day a daf in the Gemara? There was criticism. Now, on page 149, footnote 54, he quotes this opposition or this criticism right here by Rebbein Yitzvei. That Rebbein Yitzvei, who I yet knew from Lakewood, Talmud of Rabbi Aaron Cutler, afterwards, he's the founder, he brings in Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, but he's the founder of the yeshiva in Philadelphia. He was married to Rav Kamenovich's daughter, Devorah Kamenovich. I knew them very well. I was Rav nearby, my first shtela, Lower Marion. Here, he at the ninth Siyum HaShas, and he scolded the crowd for feeling they had the audacity to climb the mountain of Shas unprepared. His remarks were made in Yiddish, and most people were unable to understand them. There might have been a hostile reaction from the crowd if his negative comments had been more widely understood. And wow, this is already in our time, when Daf Yomi is caught on, and this is Reb Eliot Zvei finding fault with the massive response to Daf Yomi. Now, I want to say, I was very upset by the article in Tradition, and Reb Eliot Zvei, it doesn't surprise me, his point of view, I knew him, and he was one of those individuals that had a hashkafa that left no room for others. In other words, it goes to Rav Shach, Mashmiyei Hashmua, that Rav Shach introduced the whole concept of we have to continue exactly the way our grandparents and great-grandparents studied and lived, etc., that there's much more to tradition than just Torah Shabbat Peh as we know it. I personally was not raised this way. I cannot accept it. Here, you talk about Chabad. Think what the world would be today without Chabad. Just think. Traveling, hospitality, kashrut, Shabbat, a place to go to, the Mossad, which turns many times to other Jews to help them out. If you saw the article yesterday in the Jerusalem Post that already appeared in America a few days earlier, people contacted me. Chaim Topal, the actor, he worked for the Mossad. Whenever they needed help, he could travel all over. He was famous. They couldn't kick him out of the Soviet Union. It would bring very bad publicity. I want to tell you, Chabad shluchim over the world, many of them have helped the Mossad. They're on the ground. They know the situation. Think what the world would be. Tell me, was this Chabad 100 years ago? Was this Chabad 80 years ago? Absolutely not. But this evolved. Nothing wrong with it. It's fabulous. Standing on street corners to put on tefillin, Guys like Rakefet, their Litvishin Hisham gets upset. Maybe you asking those jerks who don't know the first thing about Yiddish to put on. Yeah, but Chabad's attitude is, and you remember what the Rav said, I quote the Rav in my writings, I quote him a number of times. When they asked her, how do you react to that? The Rav said, we don't do it, we weren't raised to it. But you have to understand, when Chabad says to you, are you a Jew? Did you put on tefillin? I'm quoting the Rav. It may start the thought process. Am I a Jew? What is being a Jew? And how can you say Chadash Hasur min HaTorah? Take a look at why you. Revolutionary, what we have. You can go to yeshiva, a real yeshiva, and 3 o'clock I went to university. You mastered two worlds. You could come out with ability. I have to answer questions of students, breaks my heart. I told you this yesterday. Guy studied in yeshiva, he's 23 years of age, he wants to find a wife. He barely graduated high school. He's not cut out, he doesn't have the ability to be a Rosh Yeshiva, to be a Dayan, to be a Rav. What can he do? And I've seen this more than once. Something evolved in YU. Is it good? My point of view, I think it's fabulous. Can we have it in Israel? Not exactly like America. Here we have a different problem, the army. I started college, I was 17 years old. In Israel, you finish your Hezda, you're 22, 23. You follow me, you're in Shalavim Abi, you know what I'm talking about. It's a different ballpark here. But to be able to manage the modern world, the core curriculum, what's wrong? What's wrong? I can tell you a yeshiva here once said to me, bring Yeshiva University here, we need it. I said to him, I'll be happy to help bring it, but you'll demonstrate against us. He says to me, your task is to bring it. I'll have to demonstrate, but I'll be happy you're here. At least he was honest. But I understand very well, not everyone can master Shas. Not everyone has the time to do a Daf Yomi properly. But isn't it beautiful? Jews learning Daf Yomi all over the world. United. Everyone understands it on their level. More than that, and this point already was made, he has a footnote here by Shmuel Blum. He succeeded Rav Moshe Sherrow as executive director of Agudat Yisrael. I knew him as well. I met him a number of times. Remember, I had a very close relationship with Moshe Sherrow. And he made the point that the Daf Yomi Siyum becomes a time when all Jews are united. Were you at the last one in New Jersey?
Here in Israel.
You were here in Israel. Jersey. My nephews were there. In America, freezing. There it was out in the stadium. My nephews told me it was like being in Alaska. But there were, 80,000, 90,000 people there? Not all were Agudistim. Some were Litvakim. Some were Hasidim. Some were Agudistim. There might have been a sprinkling of some Satma who wandered in. You got to remember, even in Satma, they're affected by the overall vision that's beyond their ghetto. I'll be a very simple example. I know a guy named Aaron Rakefet. He has Talmidim from Satma. Real Talmidim. Loyal Talmidim in Satma who understand them very well. There was some Satma there. There were Tzionistim there, Zionists, Mizrachistim, Bnei Akivaniks there. It becomes an event of godlet of Torah. Let me just go one drop further, and we alluded to this before. The Gerer Rebbe says, I'm starting Daf Yomi. So he quotes here the memoir literature. Immediately, Masechet Bracha disappeared from the shelves. And here's something we don't realize, and I remember the Shanghai crowd telling me about this. You are so lucky in America, everyone owns a shas. I was growing up, I remember the first shas I bought. My father, Zichron Levracha, went with me to the east side, and we slept at home on the 3rd Avenue well. Remember the 3rd Avenue well? It doesn't exist. Morty, you wouldn't know. It was a train above ground that you could... That's where the Shaila comes in. Remember I spoke about it in class 40, 50 years ago. Rabbi Yitzchak Hanu was asked if you... Then when you paid, there was a guy, generally an Irishman, who sat and you paid him. And he let you... You paid him Erev Shmini Atzeret, and you told him, look, a day from now I want to get on and I'm paying you in advance because I can't carry money on Yom Tov. You get on the train 180th Street, which was my stop, and you take it to East Broadway. And there's Gevan and Emesis Simchas Torah. They were dancing and there were Jews and Rabbanim. And Avi, Rabbi Zochanan was Matir. But he had to withdraw the Heter. I heard this where I grew up from the Elter Yidden. I couldn't believe it. A Talmud of mine doing research found it in a newspaper here in New York, a Yiddish paper from the 1880s, I think it was. And Rabbi Zochanan had to withdraw the Heter. Because the Rabbanim here explained to him that it will be mocked the Jews using the 3rd Avenue well on 2nd day Yom Tov, it'll wind up Chilul Shabbos. So this Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan, wow. So the shuls, you went down to the east side. I remember I bought the shas, 33 Canal Street, Old Sas Svarim, a little shas, my brother has it today. You probably have it too. It was B-Shot. Yeah, and the shots, that was it. That, today, if you would know how many shots I have, my wife said, it's going to be with all these shots. I'm not going to worry about it now. What happened as so my Rebbeim told me that you were lucky in Europe if you could find the Gemara you want. Not everyone had an entire shots. And you had to know who had if you wanted an esoteric Gemara, you had to know who had it. And where there was an entire shas, was on the lock and key. You could use it, but you had to return it right away. I remember in Lakewood, where Rabaran, his little, where his study was, in the main building where the so-called base venture was, a small Lakewood then, 102 students, I believe, in my time. There were Rabaran, a Schulzinger Shas blue, do you remember that? State of the art, blue, what a binding, given to him by Mr. Stephen Klein of Barton's under lock and key. Students, no one's allowed to touch it. Now, with the birth of Dafyomi, you begin widespread printing of Shas. It's no longer, he quotes a footnote where they said that the Chafetz Chaim said owning a Vilna Shas was very rare. That was already a beautiful Shas. And even a Zhitomir Shas, known as the poor man's Shas, was a mark of distinction. After the Daf Yomi went on the map, Shasim were published and republished and widely distributed, and Baruch Hashem today, that's the start of your library, a Chumash with Mefarshim, Tanakh, and a Shas, and it's widely available, every type of format you can imagine. And there you have it in your pen, in your palm. What is that, an iPad? What is it called?
My iPhone. I have the whole Archbold Shas.
That the whole Archbold Shas. What a world. My dear students, there's nothing like a doctorate. On a high school level, a collegiate level, all right, Mendavent up, you say the Daf Yomi. But we put Gidim veins and sinews into what Reb Meir Shapiro did. It's a sad story. He dies so young. He worked so hard to build the yeshiva. The yeshiva, within a few years, becomes the home of the Gestapo. We'll have a lot to cry about. But the Daf Yomi lives on. It's 1,000 times more alive than it was during his lifetime. And we owe him a great, great thank you. And we thank Reb Meir Shapiro for raising the Baumel family that gives us Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb, Zichronim Tzadikim Levracha. My dear students, are there any questions on what we accomplished today?
They want to discuss, you know, if you get some siyata d'shmaya, so every time you learn a daf and you find the parsha from Yom Tov comes up right, I mean, it's uncanny.
We're going to talk about that next week. That's or the week afterwards. I'll tell you why in a second. Yes, I'm aware of what you're saying, and I'm going to show you formally what Reb Meir Shapiro suggested, and it fits right in with what you said.
But
absolutely. Now let's just think aloud. Next Sunday we have class. Next Monday is Yom HaZikaron.
No, Tuesday.
Tuesday is Yom HaZikaron. Wednesday is Yom HaTzmud. So we can have class Monday. We're not affected. Vic, you're not affected. Remember, I don't want to have class Yom HaZikaron, make a fool out of myself. Remember what happened years ago.
No, no.
Oh, so we can have normal class Sunday. Monday, very good. So next week, I'll touch upon it. Next Sunday, I'll pick up exactly where I left off. Wake up Yomo, he has to. Yomo, wake him up. Hit him over the head. He woke up. Baruch Hashem. Yomo gets paid for assisting me, and I get paid for waking him up. Okay, thank you, Baruch Hashem. Next week, we pick up exactly where we left off, Mashkicha Kashrut, and the implications coming right down to Rav Gedalia Schwartz and RCA and questions. Then we move slightly sideways with a woman, and we deal with the woman and her role in war, what she is supposed to do, Milchemet Mitzvah, very fascinating. But leave that for next Sunday, Be'ezrat Hashem. And Monday we continue right here, and then we flow in to Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin, and you'll see they never were able to find a total proper successor to Rav Meir Shapiro. He was one of a kind. And even though, generally speaking, you always, you know, people think, who can succeed me? You take Rabbi Dr. Bernard Lander. Everyone thought Turo would fall apart with his death. And take a look, Turo's bigger and stronger than ever. And that's a credit to Dr. Lander. Doesn't take away from his greatness. But this is life. There's always success, always a new generation. Dar Halech V'Dav Bar. But with Reb Meir Shapiro, it didn't happen. Maybe it would have happened if not for Hitler. But Hitler came along too soon, and it upset the apple cart. All right, thank you so much for honoring me with your presence, and between me to get in health and happiness. Das Vidanya. Open it up, Yomo.
Recording stopped.
Okay. Are there any questions from around the world? Yes.
You talked about the kashrus and the kidney hook.
Right.
This is a true story. It was told by Rabbi Wein. Remember, he used to be the
kashrus
in America.
Right.
He said this in public, so I can repeat it. The das came to him, and they wanted to use some of the OU ingredients, the materials for.
Right.
You know, the commercial ingredients.
Right. They share the computer.
Okay, but they realized that the OU is Mater cottonseed oil.
Right.
So they said, we can't have anything to do with you. So he said, I'm almost quoting his words, he said, I looked him straight in the face and said, what's your problem with cottonseed oil? And the guy looked at him and said, what do you mean? Kutna. Kutna. It's Kitnio.
Kitnio. The name.
How can you even think of using
the name? The name.
The name.
No, no. We Ashkenazim suffer in Israel. When we look at what's available, I was in the shuk. I was crying. I tell you, I did. I have to admit, I made my house Pesachtik. As you know, I stopped teaching. We were Pesachtik a week early, one full week. So I bought up cookies. Ugh, were they good? Were they good? Then Erev Pesach, I had to put everything away, but I pulled them out after Pesach. We still haven't had bread in the house. I told Malk, unfortunately, we're older. Today I teach, yesterday I taught, tomorrow we have a doctor's appointment, I have to go away. Wednesday I'll go shopping, Be'ezrat Hashem, and I'll buy. If I had my way, I would stick to matzah until Erev Pesach. I love matzah, what can I do? It's Jewish bread, I love it. And I would lechem mishnah. The problem is my wife likes good the whole wheat rolls. And this issue, you have to follow your wife. There's certain issues, you know, I have a lot of Torah on this, let me not bore you, but here you have to set the example and give in to your wife. If you give in on this, there may be another issue that you like a certain type of chocolate bar, and your wife says it's no good, it has sugar, it has this and that, but it's so good, so she'll give in to you and let you sneak in the chocolate bar. My dear students, we have to clear out of here. I want to thank Mark Wiener, Rabbi Dr. Mark Wiener, helped me immensely on Pesach, because past Pesachim, tums were acceptable. And this Pesach, I see the Chicago rabbinate, part of your family from Chicago, they don't allow tums. And
Some.
Well, at first I saw all, but he gave me an etza. Baking soda has sodium bicarbonate. It solves the whole problem. The only thing is it has a bad aftertaste. So I bought lollipops. Baruch Hashem, Osherat had lollipops that are good even for those who don't eat kidneyot. And it didn't even have May kidneyot, which I would eat, but it didn't have anything. So I bought lollipops. I had it made, sodium bicarbonate lollipops. Reflux is part of growing older. So there is a pill I take, but it helps, it doesn't help, I don't know. I take a light dosage. My grandson has the problem is from birth, it's not something with old age. So he takes a heavy dosage, and he explained to me, you have to take it an hour and a half before your wheat meat. There's something where, and he doesn't have any problem, Baruch Hashem. I have a light dosage, but Tums, fabulous, I'm happy. At the end of the Chag, Mark sent me, they did research, sometimes yes, sometimes no, but Baruch Hashem, which for a few days left of the Chag, I don't have to get involved in pilpulim soda, baking soda with a good lollipop, and I had it made. Mark, when do you leave? When do you fly towards Israel? We don't hear you. Did you unmute him?
I muted. I made the option for everyone to unmute themselves. So.
They have to unmute themselves. Can you unmute yourself? Unmute him. He punished him.
A few hours, I'm going to start the trip.
Okay, it should be bracha v'hatzlacha. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das v'danya.